Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is made possible by our supporters over on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get your own RSS feed with ad-free shows and extra episodes every month, then head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And we're back. It's 2024. It's the second episode of 2024. My name is Jason Robbins.
And my name is Derek Diamond.
And I did a little boo-boo last week, a little snafu with Amazon, if you might say. You know how my right Joy-Con's been out for a while? Mm-hmm. Well, I got a little extra Christmas money, and I went on Amazon to look up some right controllers, Joy-Cons. I found a pair of cheap controllers for $20. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and get these. They might be cheap. They're off brand, but you know, all I need is the right one. That's all I need is a working right Joy-Con. So I paid my $20, got them on Prime. I ordered them, I think Tuesday or Wednesday. They were supposed to be here on Friday. And so I look in the mailbox on Friday. I'm all excited. I'm like, oh yeah, there it is. The package is in the mail. Get it home, open it up. And I'm looking at my new controllers, and I'm like, these have no innards. I bought covers for my Joy-Cons for $20.
Oh, I'm like, no.
I didn't read close enough in the description. So, and of course, my printer is not working right now. So I had to get Amazon to send me a shipping label so I can send them back. As soon as I get that.
That's rough. That's got to be so demoralizing when you're just like, I could see you just looking up at the sky going, no.
I was so excited. It was Friday. I was like, man, I'm going to play my Switch tonight. I opened up the package just immediately, just like my heart sank. I was like, oh, man.
Got to wait just a little bit longer, I guess.
I wonder how many other people have bought those thinking, because the picture is of actual, like, working Joy-Cons.
Yeah, they can be a little misleading with not just the photos, but sometimes with the descriptions, too.
So, that's what I did last week. How was your week?
Not too bad, just kind of getting back in the swing of things as far as, you know, work and normal routines go. Almost fully recovered from the flu, I think.
Nice.
Still got a little bit of the chest congestion, but other than that, you know, not as easily tired as I have been like the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah,
that and just been playing what we're going to review tonight. Mm-hmm. Been playing some Harvest Moon, and also I did get the new Sonic game.
Ooh.
For Christmas, Sonic Superstars. So I've been playing that a little bit. So that's
nice.
Been fun. It's exactly what I thought it was going to be. It's like the new Super Mario Brothers treatment for Sonic.
Yeah.
But it's pretty good.
And Joey in the chat room says he bought one for his Amazon Fire Stick remote, thought it was a cool blue remote, and it was a cover. See, why do they do that kind of stuff? And yeah, I know, Mushmouth, I should have read that fine print. But the thing was, is I was on my phone. And usually when I order stuff on Amazon, I do it from the computer. So I saw the Joy-Cons. I was like, these look cool. You know, they were like the 90s purple, like see-through controllers. I'm like, oh, those are kind of cool. I'll get those. And just the covers. Like, I have to actually physically take the innards out of my current Joy-Cons to put inside of these Joy-Cons. I'm like, I'm not. What? No. So I immediately was just like, I want a refund.
That tricky Amazon.
Yeah. That lesson learned. Read the fine print on anything you buy.
But I will say, to be fair, you shouldn't have to read like an overly long description.
For real. That's what I'm saying. It should be right there on top. A big asterisk. These are not functioning controllers. They are controller covers.
Yeah. Agreed. But
another thing I've been doing this week is on Game Pass. I've been playing this game called Sea of Stars. Have you heard of this game yet? I think you can get it on the Switch.
You guys were talking about it in the Discord, but no, I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, it's very much in the vein of, you can tell the people that made the game are huge fans of like Chrono Trigger in games like that. And it's very much in that vein, and I'm having a blast playing that game.
Okay, I don't know if it's on the Switch or not. I'll have to look and see.
Depending on how long it is, I may do a review of it. I know Wally gets on me for reviewing non-retro stuff, but this is a modern, quote, retro game, so I think it qualifies.
I mean, I'm reviewing a remake of a retro game next week, so if he's going to throw you under the bus, I'm just as guilty.
But yeah, if you haven't tried it yet, everybody out there, just go give it a look. I was just scrolling through Game Pass the other night, and I came across it, watched the trailer, and I was like, this is pretty cool. So I downloaded it, and I've been playing it for about 4 or 5 days now, and I'm about 6 or 7 hours into it, and I'm hooked. It's really cool.
Nice. I look forward to playing it.
But that's anything else you want to throw in before we go into the news for this evening?
I don't think so.
Well, let's do it. Tonight's news stories were provided to us by Mr. Armez Jackson. If you have a news story you'd like to send them to nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. And this first story comes to us from, this was on npr.org, but this is all over the internet right now. 13-year-old in Oklahoma may have just become the first person to ever beat Tetris. 34 years after it was released, 13-year-old Willis Gibson of Oklahoma ended up advancing so far that the game itself could not keep up with him. At level 157, he reached the notorious kill screen, the point in the game where it becomes unplayable because of limitation with the game's original programming. It took him less than 39 minutes. What happens is you get so far that the programmers that made the game, they never expected you to make it that far, and so the game starts breaking down, and eventually it just stops. So this kid was amazing. Did you watch the videos, any of the videos about this kid?
Yeah, it's unreal. I'm convinced this kid is an android.
Did you see how those Tetris speedrunners use the controller? Like, I thought that, you know, the Ninja Gaiden, they call it slash canceling. I thought those guys were crazy, but this is insane. The way they hold the controller and they're like using the D-pad and they're like flicking their fingers on the back of the controller. It's so weird looking.
This actually inspired I'll post it on our Twitter, but it's a shot from The Wizard when Jimmy's playing Double Dragon. And it says, yeah, 13-year-old beat Tetris, but did he get 50,000 on Double Dragon?
Yeah, I sent that to you guys the other day. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is, I saw a video also on YouTube the other day about what happens to the game that far into it. And it was a really cool, let me look through, well, I'll make a post of it on my Twitter or something or in the Discord. I watched some pretty cool videos over the last few days about, what happens to the game once you get that far into it. and about how the game starts to pull information from the code starts to pull from the RAM, and it doesn't understand what it's doing, and it just completely breaks the game at that point. And it's crazy to know that a human, like, how did he see those pieces falling that fast? Was just beyond me.
Hand-eye coordination is off the charts. Like, it's, I've watched some cool speedrunning, but this ranks up there with just like the craziest video game material I've seen.
This kid needs to be like a neurosurgeon or something like that. I mean, just,
yes,
he needs to do something crazy with his life like that to have that amount of just pinpoint, like be able to like just focus like that.
The story should read that he didn't beat Tetris. He broke it.
Yeah.
He literally broke
it. He broke the game.
Yeah.
They never expected it. I mean, think about it. That game is now 30 years old. He's the first person to ever do this. And it's the most, that game has sold the most copies of any game ever made. It's something like 500 million copies of that game are out in the world. You can get it everywhere. You can play Tetris on any workable device in the world. Like, it's just it's the most prevalent video game probably ever. And he broke it.
Shout out to Willis Gibson for,
yeah,
for doing what no one else has been able to do.
If anybody knows him, he wants to come on the show, we'd be happy to interview him on here.
Oh, for sure. Next up, was from MyNintendoNews.com. Mother account says plans are being made for Mother 2 30th anniversary. It's hard to believe, but this year marks the Mother 2, aka Earthbound's, 30th anniversary. So, of course, there's a reason to celebrate. The official account for the series says that they are busy preparing various plans for the year ahead, which should spark fans' interest. They wouldn't divulge all the details, so we'll have to wait and see what transpires. The translation of their post on Twitter/X said, "Happy New Year. The year 2024 marks the 30th anniversary of the release of Mother 2. We are preparing various plans for the year ahead. Let's enjoy the year together."
What would you do if Nintendo just came out and was like, a remake of Earthbound, available now?
I would say one of my predictions for the year came true.
Yeah.
Because I did say that, you know, with the popularity of the Mario RPG remake and the positive feedback it's gotten, that Nintendo should look into doing that more with some of their 90s RPGs. And I think Earthbound, it makes too much sense anyway, because it has such a big following. Mm. But with it being the 30th anniversary, it makes too much sense to do it.
And Tyler in the chat room says, "And still no Mother 3 official release for the U.S. You never know. I mean, it might happen.
I'm just hoping that one of these days they're going to do a direct and they're going to make an announcement saying Mother 3 is available now.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those, like, right now you can go on the Switch and play it. Like, that would be so cool.
Because
I've wanted to play that game for forever, but it's just never been available in the States.
And I know when it's going to drop because I'll be able to hear you screaming from two states away.
or Tyler from a little bit closer by.
I'll hear dual screaming like, "Oh, they must have dropped the Earthbound remake." This is from synthanatomy.com. This is a really cool story I saw the other day. Sonicware Liven Mega Synthesis Portable Synth revives the Sega Genesis sound. God, they could have named this thing a little better. Sonicware Liven Mega Synthesis revives the gaming console sound engine in a new portable synthesizer Groovebox. With the Liven series, the young Japanese company Sonicware offers a wide range of exciting portable budget-oriented synthesizers and samplers. The hardware features MIDI, USB, form, etc., are all the same, but each instrument has its own custom engine. Let's see. It is new portable Groovebox, compromises 3 FM synthesis tracks, 2 PSG synthesis tracks, and a PCM sample track. And then it goes under all the specs on here, which I'm pretty sure that our good friend, why am I blanking on his name? He's got his own retro channel, synthwave.
Oh, Nate
does the synthwave channel. Not Nate. God damn it! My brain not working tonight.
I mean, either I'm sure you'll remember it at some point, but
Jeremy, Jeremy.
Oh yeah, Jeremy Branch.
Yeah, Jeremy Branch.
Yeah,
He's got that synthwave channel. He probably knows what.
Yeah,
all
Lucid
these
Memory.
Specs. Yeah, Lucid Memory. That's it. He probably knows what all these specs are, because this is just all garbledy gook to me.
Yeah, this is all like, I'm like Venkman and Ghostbusters. I don't understand a word that anyone's saying.
But anyway, if you want to get one of these, it retails for $239. So if you're into synthwave and doing, you know, would like to bring back some of the Sega Genesis Mega Drive sounds, this might be something you want to pick up.
Or you can just try to say Sonicware Mega Synthesis 10 times fast.
Yeah. What do they call this thing again? The Sonicware Live and Mega Synthesis.
Or as I call it, the blah, blah, blah,
blah. Yeah, the thing.
Yeah, the thing.
Yeah, I'm sure Mushmouth in the chat room, he said he wouldn't mind playing around with it. I know this would be up right up your alley, too.
And Chuck says the Sonic Symphony World Tour starts in 12 days, which is true, yeah.
Wonder if it's coming anywhere close around here.
I'll have to look at the dates.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to it.
Me too. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I've watched it on YouTube, and it's really, really cool. Because they recorded like a legit version of the Sonic Symphony, complete with spliced in vocal performances from some of the bands that have done music for Sonic throughout the years. Mm-hmm. But it's mixed with the orchestra.
That's so cool.
And it's really, really cool. But our last story comes to us from IGN. Nintendo Switch 2 predicted to arrive in 2024, possibly at $400. This was reported in IGN's Daily Fix. All signs reporting to a proper Nintendo Switch follow-up in 2024. And according to industry analysts, it'll be priced at $400 or less. Of course, there's no official word from Nintendo, but let's hope they make some kind of announcement soon. Let's see. Sony also made... that's about the Silent Hill 2 remake, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we've talked about it. You've been saying it. Nintendo Switch 2 in 2024.
It's coming this year, and at a $400 price point, that, I mean, depending on what's under the hood, I might be an early adopter, because I love the Switch.
I hope they announce it on the anniversary of when the Switch was released.
Yeah, because if they do release it, I have a feeling it's going to be a holiday release.
Oh, 100%. No, I could see like maybe in early November, because I know they did that with the GameCube when it came out back in 01. It came out like November 5th or somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Or they could do maybe in early December.
And Tyler in the chat room says, we don't get anything like that near here, not even NOLA. Sometimes we do. I did go see the London Symphony Orchestra when they were doing the Star Wars thing.
That's sick.
I saw that at the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans when it came through, and that was life-altering. It was so awesome.
Oh, I bet. I would have loved to have seen that.
Because they had Anthony Daniels there, and he was kind of the MC for the night, and then they had the London Symphony Orchestra, and they had the huge screens behind, big, curved screen behind them playing all the scenes from the movie. And like, I literally cried like 3 or 4 times during the whole thing. I was just overwhelmed with emotion.
I love stuff like that. Cause you know, that's what they do with the Sonic Symphony. They did it with the Zelda Symphony.
Yeah.
When they were doing the 25 year anniversary celebration. It's just, it's such a cool idea. And there's just something about hearing like those tracks with a live orchestra in the room.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's so cool.
And before we go into this month in video game history, I want to tell everybody that we are proudly sponsored by our mobile game partner, Globe Glider. And if you like action-adventure platformers, Globe Glider is for you. Making a donation to the game using our partnership is quick and easy. Just simply hit the donate button and select Nerd Cave Retro as your referral partner to unlock sweet in-game prizes like an exclusive Nerd Cave Retro cape. So download Globe Glider now on the App Store or Google Play. And now it is time for this month in video game history. On January 24th of 1984, Apple Inc. announces the original 128K floppy disk only Macintosh 128K.
Look at that fine piece of machinery.
Dude, I would love to have one of those.
Dude, look at the mouse.
Yeah.
it just looks like a square.
We had these in my elementary school when I was a kid. This brings back like instant nostalgia.
Yeah, no, we had something similar to this when I was a kid, too.
I think we had the Apple IIs is what we had.
Oh, okay. But I remember before, like, CDs and, you know, eventually thumb drives became a thing, my mom used to have this plastic bin full of floppy disks. Mm-hmm. And they were all, like, the different colors. Like, they had, like, red, green, blue. And it was like the see-through kind, yeah. So you could actually see the inside of the floppy disk, and you're like, how does this thing even function?
Yeah. Yeah, that brings back memories, too. Remember the 3.5-inch floppy, like the containers that you could get? My mom had, like, two or three of those, and I just had them loaded up with, like, I could in my mind, sit there and look through all the floppies and see like Doom, you know, and stuff yep. like that in there.
And you could save maybe one or two pictures.
Yeah.
On a floppy disk.
Not even one whole picture.
Yeah. January 14th of 1987, Nintendo releases one of the favorite games here on the podcast, yeah. Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link for the Famicom Disk System in Japan. The game would go unreleased in America for nearly 2 years afterwards.
Yeah, should have went unreleased in America for decades.
I wonder why they waited so long.
Because they knew it sucked.
And they were like, you know what? We can't put this off any longer. We'll let those people out west. Feel yeah. our pain.
Ugh, hate that game so much. January 31st of 1992, Konami releases Bucky O'Hare for the NES in Japan. Love that game.
Shout out to Bucky O'Hare.
Yeah.
And finally, January 21st of 1999, HAL Laboratory and Nintendo release Super Smash Brothers for the N64 in Japan, which launched one of the best multiplayer series of all time.
I still remember that commercial for the Smash.
So
Super
happy
Smash Brothers.
Together.
Beating the crap out of one another. That was some of the best advertising Nintendo ever did.
I remember I didn't know that game was a thing until I saw that commercial. And when I saw because they spliced in gameplay, like in between the fighting. And my mind was just blown because, you know, like all of us who grew up with Nintendo, we've always thought, well, what would happen if Mario and Link were in the same game together? Or yeah. what if Metroid and Star Fox were in the same game? Which that would make for a good crossover, like a legit mm-hmm. crossover, Metroid and Star Fox.
Oh, yeah.
And it answered those questions. And it's still going on to this day.
Mm-hmm. It was a good idea. Make a fighting game, Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
But before we go into the review tonight, Derek, would you like to do our Patreon shout-outs?
Absolutely. As always, we'd like to shout-out our awesome patrons over at patreon.com/NerdCaveRetro. We want to shout-out YupFed, a.k.a. Knife, James, a.k.a. at Jimbo Jr. on our Discord, Travis Martin, Raven, Danny House, Justin Nispel, John West, Daniel Salmon, Mr. B-Rez Coffee himself, Mike Eveland, Tyler Watson, AxeBlade07, Armez Jackson, Carlos Longoria, a.k.a. I am the Rampage, Steph Sergeant Sketch, Gus and Penny, Matthew Salmon, Mr. Joey Image, And of course, last but not least, Mama Diamond herself, Donna Diamond. Thank you all so much for your continued contributions and keeping the lights on for us here at the Nerd Cave Retro Podcast. For as little as $1 a month, you get early access to our amazing commentary tracks. And we also proved that we will do just about anything for our Patreon subscribers, because we are still reeling from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
It's just still taking me a while to get over that. Like, it's so terrible. Like, it's so bad.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, as a filmmaker, it makes me feel better because that got made. And I'm like, you know what? This gives me hope. No pun intended.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's also like they wasted money on that. Like, what in the world that could have been done that was good didn't get made because that was made?
So, I love Uncle George. He gave us Star Wars, and I think he's one of the best storytellers of our generation. However, you do got to keep him on a leash a little bit.
Yeah.
And that was an instance where he broke off the leash.
See, what happens when you put him on the leash? You get Empire Strikes Back. When you take him off the leash, you get Ewoks. So, do the math.
That makes me think of that Clerks quote. All Jedi had was a bunch of Muppets. But we've also done, you know, much better commentary tracks too, like Batman 89, Christmas Vacation, Clue, Transformers the Movie, even bad movies like Double Dragon and Super Mario Brothers. Those are fun commentary
tracks. I thought Double Dragon was the worst thing we'd ever done until the Star Wars Holiday Special. And now I'm pretty sure Double Dragon is the Godfather compared to the Holiday Special.
I was going to say if we did Mortal Kombat Annihilation, that would be possibly the worst thing we've ever done, but it's not as bad as the Holiday Special.
No, nothing so far has been as bad as the Holiday Special.
No. So if you want to be a part of our awesome Patreon community, just head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And for new patrons, be sure to send us your social media information, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, so we can give you a proper shout out.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And tonight, we're going to be talking about... Rocket Knight Adventures is a platform game developed and published by Konami for the Sega Genesis. The game involves Sparkster, an opossum knight who wields a rocket pack and a sword that can emit energy projectiles as he attempts to stop the Devotindos. Is that how you say that? Devotindos?
Sure.
Empire. An evil empire that attempts to break the seal of a powerful starship. It was designed by Nobuya Nakazato, designer of such Contra games as The Alien Wars, Hardcore, and Shattered Soldier, and it was released in Japan and North America in August of 93 and Europe in September. Upon release, the game received positive reviews. So I knew we were going to do this game for a while, or I know that our good friend Mushmouth mentioned it a few months back, and we threw it in the we should review list. And I got a ROM of it a couple of weeks ago and finally played it about a week and a half ago and played it for about 2 or 3 hours. And that was when I texted you. I was like, yep, we got to review this game.
So then I got a ROM of it and I've been playing it, you know, throughout the week. And I didn't really know what to expect from the game because I didn't watch any gameplay of it. I'd seen a couple of screenshots. So I knew I would at least like it because I put this in my notes. The look reminds me of The Magical Quest starring Mickey Mouse, which I reviewed, you know, a while back on the podcast. It looks like peak 90s 16-bit platforming.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything, like the graphics are smooth. It's got that nice style of animation that is 90s, but also still holds up, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's stylized enough that you could even put this game out now and it would still look fresh and new. Because it does sort of have, I mean, it looks like you're playing a cartoon. Like, it's such a beautiful game. And I love the aesthetic of the game. I love the colors. The way the character moves, Sparkster. I love the way he moves and just the character animations and the gameplay is just so smooth on the game. Like that was one thing I was just like when I played it. I had never played this game before either, and I didn't know what to expect. And it's not your typical run and gun type of platformer. There's a lot of things in the game as far as you know, with the use of the rocket pack and things like that, to get over obstacles and things like that, and reach certain places. Like it really was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, and that was something that really jumped out at me whenever I started playing it. Because in the first level that you're in, or first stage, there's a column that you have to jump over, but you can't jump that high. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out what to do, and then I'm like, too. Oh, wait a minute, I have the rocket.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to figure out exactly, because there's a little bit of, I won't say a learning curve, but you got to play around with the rocket a little bit to really kind of get a grasp on how to move, you know, and like where and how to push, you know, the right buttons.
Yeah.
In order to, because otherwise you might just, you know, shoot yourself across the screen and not be able to move or go straight up, which I did that a couple of times.
Yeah.
but it really does add a cool dynamic to it. At times I felt like it made me a little too powerful, but the game is challenging enough that I think it warrants that.
But that's the thing, is like you feel overpowered at times, but then there are times where you're just like, am I doing any damage at all to like some of the bosses that you come across? I'm just like, am I doing any damage whatsoever? And then all of a sudden the boss is dead and you're just like, oh, well, all right, I guess I was hitting him.
Well, see, like I felt like your normal run-of-the-mill enemies were fairly easy to beat once I figured out the rocket.
Yeah.
But you're right, whenever you get to the boss fights, you got to be a little more strategic and cerebral.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing. Like, I didn't finish the game because, God, this game is long.
Yeah, it is.
And I got, I think, to level 3 or 4, got through several mini-bosses, several bosses. I got past the crab, the boss with the mechanical crab on the underwater stage. That was as far as I could get. And then I was just like, you know, I'm just going to watch a speed run of this game so I could see the rest of the game. And there was one speed run that I watched. It was from a speed running thing they did in Las Vegas a couple of months ago. And this guy was explaining everything he was doing while he was speed running the game. And there was so much going through that goes into beating this game, because like I said, it's not just your typical run and jump platformer. There's a lot of strategy involved with this game. Like, it takes a lot of patience and kind of knowing, like, your boss battles are, you know, there's phases to the boss battles. It's not just hit the boss and, you know, cheese the boss. It's like you got to actually kind of know what you're doing during these boss battles.
You'll get a kick out of this. So I put this in my notes. The same train fight that you put in your notes that I'm, you know, I guess we could go ahead and get to.
Yeah.
It reminded me of, you know the scene in the first Sonic movie whenever Sonic and Tom are on the highway and they destroy Robotnik's giant tank?
Yeah.
And then the other, like a smaller robot, pops out of it.
Yeah.
And then they destroy that one. Mm-hmm. That's what I felt like. I'm like, this thing will not stop.
Like that whole, like that was actually my favorite part of the game so far was that, because you're on a, not a train car, but a mine
like
cart.
Like a mine cart.
It's like a mine cart level. And that's the cool thing about this game is it's got pretty much everything you've ever played, but does it in a cool way. Like it's not as frustrating as the mine cart in like Donkey Kong Country or anything. Like this is just like, the only way you're going to fall off is if you do something stupid or not know the patterns of what's coming or when to jump and things like that. But you're trying to, when you get to the boss, like you're trying to fight this runaway train on the tracks and you're on a different track than it is, but it's got these arms that are swinging at you. And then it's just, it's an insane amount of stuff that's happening on the screen. And you're just like, am I doing any damage to this thing? And then eventually it dies and you're like, oh, okay, I guess I passed this part. But it was just, it's almost like sensory overload a little bit.
Well, and also leading up to the boss fight, whenever you have to kill all the enemies that are in the individual carts and then hop from cart to cart to cart to cart.
It's insane.
So it's a lot.
But it's cool, though. I mean, it's a really fun game to play. And I wrote on here, the music's great. Like, some of the best music I've heard from the Sega Genesis. Which, don't get me wrong, the Genesis sound chip is okay. But that was always kind of the thing, was the Super Nintendo had a much better sound chip than the Genesis did. The Genesis is always kind of, always, the music was always a little bit tinny to me. But this music was, it wasn't quite as jarring as most Genesis music is. But it sounded really good. Like there's some really good music. Like I would sit and listen to the soundtrack of this game just to listen to it.
Yeah. I put in my notes that the music can never end and I wouldn't complain. Like I love video game music from this era. And to be honest, like outside the Sonic games, I haven't heard any Genesis tracks that are really that good or memorable. But yeah, the music from top to bottom in this game was really good. It didn't sound like tinny. Mm. It sounded really good.
Yeah, and all the sound effects were really cool in this game. And we didn't really talk about the plot of the game, and it's kind of a lot going on in this game. The first king of Zephyrus had led his there's just so much. Basically, it's a save the princess type of game.
Yeah.
And your name is Sparkster, and you're a knight, and you have a rocket pack on your back, and you're a possum. So go. I mean, it's convoluted, but it's basically the same thing as Mario. It's just like, save the princess. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, story-wise, it's just very straightforward, but this is one of those that, you know, this is about the gameplay. This is about just being in a fun world. And something else I wanted to throw in there too about the aesthetic of the game. I really like the backgrounds.
Yes.
Because in the first level, you know, you see like the castle in the background that's under attack. You've got the mountains and the clouds, and you didn't see that a whole lot really until like later in the stage of the Super Nintendo or the Genesis, I feel like. So there's some real detail in this game.
And I was losing a lot of lives just because I was paying more attention to the background than what was going on. That's why I liked watching the videos of this game, because I could actually pause and like look at some of the detail in the background.
Yeah, so the designers of this game, you could tell they took 0 days off.
Yeah.
When they didn't, to put it bluntly, they didn't half-ass anything when it came to this.
And I love that they pretty much took every genre of game that you could, of platform style game that you could put in here. Like we talked about the minecart level. There's levels where you're trying to avoid lava on the floor. And you have to, the lava keeps coming up and down. And that one level took me forever to figure out that you have to wait for the lava to come up, because you'll see platforms hidden behind some stalactites that you have to jump to. And I was like, oh, I know what's going on here. And then they got levels that are like a side-scrolling shooter, you know, like Gradius or R-Type, like that type of stuff going on. There's like so much going on in this game.
I think it was the second stage. You get to a point where like the whole screen is flashing red and you have this beam of fire that shoots out at you like from random spots on the map. Mm-hmm. So you gotta be really leery of that. So it's just, I like the variety in the game, you know. It's, you harken it back to like the Super Mario Brothers, like old school platforming games. You had your underwater stages, you had your caves, you had your normal overworld, you had your castle. You had enough of a variety where you felt like you weren't playing a carbon copy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I felt playing this.
And another thing about this game, and I would have never known about this unless I watched the speedrun videos, but there's a lot of strategy in this game as far as, you know, going into the boss fights where you have, you know, you have a health bar, like a pretty healthy health bar, and you can take a lot of hits before you die. But this game is a lot like the original Ninja Turtles, where, you know, the more closer to death they got, the stronger they got. So a lot of speedrunners will get their turtles down to like a couple of hit points and they hit like really hard. This game is that same way. If you let your health bar go down to certain points, you hit way harder than you would if you had if you go into the boss fight with like a full health bar.
Yeah, I read about that and I was like, you know what? I'm not brave enough to try that. If I were more familiar with the game, mm-hmm. then I might be willing to do it. But
yeah.
I understand the strategy, though.
But just some of the cool stuff, too. Like, there was a level you go through where there's, you know, you're traveling on vines, platforming on vines through the level. And then there are spots where you got to go behind the waterfall, because the vines are behind the waterfall, and you fight the boss that way too, because there's these platforms that are going, you know, front and back beneath the waterfall. And I thought that was really inventive at the time.
That was my favorite boss fight that I played, when you fight that like giant mechanical worm type thing.
Yeah.
And it goes behind the waterfall. So then you have to go behind it in order to deal damage to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of flip back and forth. I thought that was really innovative. And, you know, I mentioned Sonic Superstars earlier. It does something similar where you like go into the background, because it's a 2D game. It plays just like the old school Sonics, but there are certain spots where you go into the background of the stage and you have to, you know, collect rings or do a certain objective, and then you come back into the foreground. So to see that this was done, you know, back then was, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's almost like they took everything that they thought was cool about other games and they're like, eh, let's put that in here too, somewhere.
And at the end of the day, I mean, who doesn't like a possum and a...
So sorry about the abrupt end to the conversation there, everybody. We had a slight power outage here at the house, and we're back. So we're going to finish out this episode as fast as we can before the power goes out again, because the weather is apparently raging outside. So we'll see what happens, everybody. But we were talking about, where were we at when we were so rudely interrupted by Mother Nature?
I know we were talking about like some of the boss battles. You know, I mentioned specifically the mechanical worm that you fight that goes behind the waterfall, and we were talking about how like inventive that was, because it's used a lot in modern 2 or 2.5D platformers, but this was done, you know, now over 30 years ago.
Yeah. I really did enjoy this game, and I was doing some research, and there was a Super Nintendo sort of version of this game. Now, there was a version that was planned but it was never released for the Super Nintendo. But they did do a spinoff game for the Super Nintendo called Sparkster, which I played a little bit of the other day. And it's a lot of the same kind of gameplay, but it has a different look to it. I still enjoy it, but I kind of like the look of the Super Nintendo, the Sega Genesis one better, Rocket Knight Adventures, because the Super Nintendo has a softer look to the graphics. It looked a lot more like Mega Man X, like that style of game. Like, it was a beautiful game, don't get me wrong, but I preferred the way the Genesis one looked, and the music wasn't as good either. But I think I still might play it, get a little space between Rocket Knight Adventures and it, and come to that with fresh eyes and see what I feel like, you know, in a couple months, and do a review of that, because I enjoyed what I played, but it was kind of like, well, it's not, you know, it's not Rocket Knight Adventure, so I kind of need some space between the two.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. But it says here that Sparkster has appeared as a playable character in games like New International Track and Field for the DS, Crazy Kart Racing for iPhone and iPod Touch, Snatcher for the Mega CD, and Mitsumete Knight for the PlayStation.
I never heard of that.
So he's been around a little bit, which is surprising considering that I never really knew of this game back in the day.
And that's the thing. Like, I really feel like he could have been a mascot, if not for the Genesis, at least for Konami. Like, and I kind of wonder what happened. Like, this is such a good game. Like, why he never kind of took off as like I think they did actually use him as a mascot for a little while, but he just didn't. And he should have ended up on our failed mascots episode too, because I never even really heard of him until Mushmouth brought it up and looked it up and was like, oh, this game looks cool. And here we are talking about it. I guess it was just kind of they didn't do very well with the, I don't know, the advertising for this game, I guess.
I mean, marketing does have a lot to do with the success of, you know, like, what, not just video games, but with movies and TV. If you don't have at least a little bit of advertising and clever advertising at that, then, I mean, nobody, you could have the best product in the world, but nobody's going to know it exists.
Yeah, I feel like he has a great marketability for being a video game character. I mean, he could have been up there with at least Mega Man. You know how Mega Man is a kind of a mascot for Capcom at the time. Like, Rocket Knight could have, you know, Sparkster could have been a mascot for Konami at the time. Like, this game should have had like dozens of sequels. Like, we should still be playing Rocket Knight games today. Like, that's how good I think this game is.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, you know, all the reception agrees with us. You know, computer and video games gave it an 88%. EGM gave it 40 out of 50. Joypad, 96%. Meme Machines, 91%. Mega Action, 94%. Mega Tech, 92%. Sega 16, 9 out of 10.
Yeah, high scores for it.
Yeah, really, really good scores for a franchise that never took off.
And I don't know if I have, at this age, I have the ability for the memorization it takes to speed run it in this game or anything, but I think this definitely might go into the rotation of games that I'm just going to play from now on, just pop it in and play it. And I would love to have a hard copy of this game. And I looked on eBay, they're going to run you between $40 and $50 for a copy of this, which isn't bad. But if you want a copy of Sparkster for the Super Nintendo, you're going to have to shell out some cash for that one. Those go for about $200 a pop.
Oh, right up there with Earthbound.
Yeah.
But Tyler in the chat is right. A revival of the series was released in 2010 for the Xbox 360, PS3, and Steam, and was developed by British studio Climax Group.
Huh, I don't even remember that at all.
You know, I kind of, the cover art does look kind of familiar for the reboot.
No, it doesn't.
I have to watch some gameplay of that.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to definitely go back and play it though, because I would love to see what they did in 2010 for this.
Same.
But
what would you give it?
I'm going to give this game at least a 9 out of 10. I mean, other than being brutally hard, there's not much that you can say bad about this game.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. It was really enjoyable. I wish I could have beaten it before we did the review. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But I enjoyed it from top to bottom. I like the level design. I like the fun characters. I thought even the death animations for the enemies you fight were pretty funny.
Yeah.
The boss fights are fun. So yeah, I think I'd agree with you. I think I'd give this a 9. It was really, really good.
It was, like I said, it was a good surprise. And that's why I immediately texted you. I was like, yeah, we need to dual review this like right now.
And here we are.
Here we are. But that's our review for Rocket Knight Adventures. Go in stores now.
Rated E for everyone.
Yeah, rated E for everyone. But that's going to do it for this week. What do we got coming up next week?
So next week, I'm going to be reviewing the Super Mario RPG remake.
Awesome.
Which I've had a lot of fun playing. So I'm really excited to talk about it.
And also, we want to let you guys know after that, not next week, but the week after, we're going to be doing our next top five list. And what is our next top five list going to be again?
We decided on top five multiplayer games.
Yeah, so your top five multiplayer games that you love the most. So get those. Go to our Discord. You can put it right there in the top five submissions tab. Or you can DM us on Twitter or X, whatever you're calling it these days, Facebook. But probably the best way to do it is do it on the Discord or email it to us, nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. So, Derek, what is going on with the Derek Diamond Experience?
Well, it is back. I dropped the newest episode right before we started recording this. I'm listed my top five movies of 2023. And I will say this, I did finally watch Oppenheimer yesterday. It's as good as people have made it out to be.
I still gotta see it. I haven't seen it yet.
It is excellent. So you'll have to listen to the episode to see if it made my number one.
Awesome.
But the show's, you know, gonna be back on a normal schedule. So new episodes will be coming out on Mondays.
And go check me and Mr. Jacob Craig out on the Open Micers podcast, openmicers.com, at Open Micers on Twitter and Instagram. Last week, we did our Guest of the Year episode, and the winner was Mr. Mo Alexander. And man, excuse me, we had a great time on that episode. I got to pull a lot of clips out of that one. So go check that episode out. I laughed way too hard in that episode a couple of times. And Mr. Mo is just one of the funniest people on the planet, and I love having him on the show.
The energy is different whenever he's on the show. He's just, not to disrespect any of your previous guests, but
he brings out the best in both of us for some reason.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
And also, at the end of this month, Mr. Derek Diamond is going to be joining us on the 29th. For our monthly episode of Headliners, where we talk about all the goofiest headlines in the news for that month. So if you want to hear us talk about probably a lot of stories about Lil Boosie, he seems to be a mainstay in our weird headlines news stories. So go check us out when that drops.
That's what I hope we talk about, honestly.
I mean, we didn't even do a Headliners episode with Mo, and we had three little Boosie stories to talk about with him.
It felt like two episodes in one, in a good way.
But we got to have a little Boosie on the show, so if we can get our Patreon up to $4,000 a month, then we can pay him to come on the show and just be weird. So yeah. Go give us money so we can get little Boosie on the show over there at Open Micers.
Fantastic.
But is that it? Is that everything for this week?
I think so.
Well, let's get out of here. If you want to email us at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. Nerdcaveretro.com is our link tree. That takes you everywhere you need to go on our socials, our merch shop. We have ways to cash app us and PayPal over there. If you don't want to be a patron, but you want to give us some money, we got a couple of tabs up there for you. Also, ncrmerch.com takes you to our shop where you can get t-shirts, hats, stickers, magnets, bags, mugs, whatever your nerdy little heart desires. And you know what else helps the show? Leaving us a 5-star review or a 5-star rating on all podcasting platforms. And that puts us in front of more people, and we get more people listening to the show. So go do that. And if you want to watch us every week, youtube.com/jfunktastic. Derek, tell them what it's all about.
A fellow checker, eh?
Hey, Derek, have you heard the news?
What news?
We officially have our very own line of coffee at brezcoffeeco.com.
That's right. Nerd Cave Retro now has its very own medium roast coffee.
If you want to try it yourself, or even some of the other awesome flavors like Wizard's Potion, which is a butterscotch, caramel, and hazelnut flavored roast.
Or the Dragon's Breath roast, which is a cinnamon dolce flavored roast.
They have tons of different flavors, and you can also just get a regular Colombian roast and add any flavor to it that you want. They even keep their seasonal roasts all year round.
If you need that boost to get you through those all-night gaming sessions, then head over to brezcoffeeco.com and use the promo code NCR for 10% off your order.
This podcast is a Zoo House LLC production.